For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Moms Talk Autism. We have a special guest on today, so stay tuned.
When you become a mom, you never imagine your child getting an autism diagnosis. It feels like your dreams have shattered, like a framed photograph falling off your mantle, exploding into a thousand pieces. But instead of trying to glue those pieces back together, this community of moms is here to help you build a new dream. A better one. So join in the conversation as us moms talk autism.
Okay, today we have four people on the podcast today. Myself, Brittany. We have Tashi Tosh, who's raising the roof. You can't see what she is, I promise.
I was sorry.
We have Shannon.
Say good hi, morning, guys.
And our very, very special guest, Kelly Coleman. Kelly Coleman is a feature film development executive turned author who is active in the disability advocacy community. She serves on committees for Children's Hospital in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles United School District, and Canine Companions. And her book, Everything No One Tells You About Parenting a Disabled Child, Your Guide to the Essential System Services and Supports, stems from her own parenting experience, giving parents the tools to spend less time navigating the stuff and more time just loving their kids exactly as they are. She lives in LA with her husband, two kids, and a service dog, right? I don't know the service dog's name. You'll have to tell us about your family a little bit.
Yes, we could just talk about the dog the whole time.
That's fine. That's totally fine.
Right? No, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here, and I just love your podcast and your community. Our service dog's name is Hetty, and she was matched with our son, Aaron. Aaron is now 10, and his older brother, Sean, is 12. And we've had Hetty. We actually were matched with her a couple weeks before. We were matched with her in February of 2020. And we're like, cool, we're going to go everywhere. And then
fabulous.
In 2020, the world's like, you're going to go nowhere for 2 years. Bye. So really fortuitous timing. It was kind of amazing. And my book, which I'm just so excited about for all the reasons, it certainly is the thing that I needed a decade ago when we started on our journey. Parenting, our kids are amazing. I could talk about them all day. Sean is 12 and plays electric guitar and the tuba and does magic and makes movies out of Legos, and it's great. Although the plural of Lego, actually Lego, it's not Legos.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's a big deal.
Right?
You gotta get that right.
I recently learned this and I'm like, I've been living a lie. Like, this is terrible, right? Right.
I learned exactly it when my kids got obsessed with Master Builders, the show, the TV show, and that's where I was corrected, and I have learned, because everyone on there is very, very particular about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like if Amy and Jamie say it's true, then we got to, like, do what Amy and Jamie say.
100%.
Oh, my goodness. I love it.
And Aaron is also a unique individual in all his own ways as well, and loves airplanes and swimming and is the mayor of Trader Joe's and all the things. In addition to all of that, Aaron has multiple disabilities, autism being one of them. He has an overall undiagnosed genetic syndrome, and within that, the autism, cerebral palsy, epilepsy, microcephaly, cortical vision impairment, feeding tube, fine motor, gross motor, sensory, intellectual. He's like, I'm just going to check all the boxes. Mm-hmm. Like, he is an overachiever. And when I say that, also with the caveat of, like, he wakes up and is just happy to be in the world. And he sits up and he applauds when we walk into the room and calls the dog over. And so even though he has that whole list of diagnoses and, you know, more to come, I'm sure, it's not, oh, you poor thing. It actually does. I think he's just fine. You know, I think he could do without the epilepsy because that's a big problem. And certainly some of the things that do cause physical discomfort, stress, all of that, that there are, you know, things about his disabilities that, yeah, I wish you could get rid of the epilepsy. It's terrible.
Yeah.
But there's also so much about him that's just, that's who he is.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that you guys talk about on your podcast, the, we're not trying to therapy this out of our kid. We're not trying to like overcome autism. We're not trying to like snuff out neurodivergence. Like, no, we are kind of just the opposite of, we are leaning into who our kids are and what they need to thrive. Right. And whether it's my book of like, here are all the lists of how to call your insurance company and what to say to a specialist and all of that, or whether it's you guys digging into these conversations of, you know, if a therapy or medicine or whatever isn't working, it's okay to stop and it's okay to,
yeah,
like really base it on your kid. I just love that your conversations really wade into things from a place of honoring who your kid is and building out from there, because that makes it so much easier if you're not trying to quote unquote fix your kid, but you're trying to wade into who they are. It's easier for everybody.
Yeah. I think we can all agree. We all wish we had your book 10 years ago too.
Yeah.
100%. 100%. Let's talk about the book for a minute and then we want to dive into some specific, more specific topics. But I'm going to say the title again because it is a little bit long, but every word is needed. Yeah, it's Everything No One Tells You About Parenting a Disabled Child, Your Guide to Essential Systems, Services, and Supports. And we were contacted by, I don't know, is agent the correct word? I don't, your person.
My publicist. She's
publicist.
The one who makes the magic happen. Yeah,
yeah, she's so wonderful.
By the way, it sounds so much fancier than it actually is, but yes, we'll make it. We'll pretend I'm fancy. I'm 0% fancy.
You're totally fancy.
You'll fit right in with us then.
I'm not the one in a birdcage with lights, so I'm just saying.
In a bird.
Tasha's sitting in her egg chair right now.
Oh,
yes.
Goodness. I know, but look at that wallpaper. Okay, I'm going to stop distracting.
But yeah, so the book, though, it's coming out soon, you guys. When you hear this episode, within a week, the book will be available. You can pre-order it now. We'll have all the links on the show notes, blah, blah, blah. You know, don't worry about that right now. The point is, the point is this book is amazing. And I read it, and every chapter as I went through, even just the introduction, my eyes were just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, realizing that this is the kind of book that we need.
Yeah.
This book fits the vibe. If you like this podcast, you're going to love this book, right? That they go hand in hand in a lot of ways. And
Oh, sorry, Britt.
No, I was just going to say, I just love the way it's formatted. So every section of the book is a different topic, a chapter, right? But it doesn't need to be read in chronological order. Right. And I really appreciated like that. You could just look in the topics and choose which topic you want to look at, IEPs, for example, and you break it down and you talk about the history of it. You talk about, you know, the basics, and then you go into, I'm thumbing through it right now. You have some experts on there. You talk about what worked for you, what didn't work for you. And then there's always at the very end, there's a letter that someone that you have met or interviewed, whether it's a professional or another mom or a parent, has written a letter to themselves. Mm-hmm. About what they wish they would have known or whatever. I'm not going to give away all the secrets. You have to get the book. But I just love the format of it. It's very, very, I don't know, maybe this sounds weird, but it's very digestible, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. You can bite off little pieces and it's not going to like overwhelm you or just cause you to not, and it's written in a way that you can understand the language. It's not like you have to read it and then translate it in your head and then figure out what it said. It's in everyday terms. A lot of books that you read, especially, you know, autism and medical or whatever, there is a medical or a therapeutic aspect to it. And so it can be kind of heavy that way. So just buy the book, just buy it.
And I mean, it doesn't matter where you're at on the journey with your child or children. You know, whether you have a 20-year-old or you're just in the beginning stages of diagnosis, that it's, you gotta have the book.
You gotta have it.
Gotta have it.
Thank you guys so much. I so appreciate that. And I have had conversations with, you know, I was just talking this week with a mom whose son has Down syndrome and is, she's like, I'm taking him to work and he is doing incredibly well and living his best life. And she's like, oh, the future care plan and the insurance and the financial planning stuff in here. Oh, I didn't realize how much I needed that, mm-hmm. you know, as well as people in the very beginnings of their journey. I felt like from the very start, I didn't want to write a book that felt like homework and was like, eat your broccoli and it sits on your desk. And then you end up feeling worse because you know you should read it, but you haven't read it. And mm-hmm. yeah. you pick it up and you're like, I don't know what any of this says. And like your podcast, like the resources that are actually usable and digestible, like you said, I wanted it to feel like a conversation with a friend. And so much of it is written in the Q&A formats. And I interviewed over 40 experts for the book and the letters and the, it's all checklists and bullet points and worksheets. And here's what worked for me. And here's what to ask yourself, because nobody has time to sit down and read a 300-page book that has every bit of info you need to know about IEPs in giant blocks of text written by someone that feels like, this is awesome, but it's homework and I do have to stop and think. And I wanted this to be usable to everyone because we all need equal yes. access to information.
Yeah, yes.
And we are not all starting out from the same point, even if kids with the same diagnosis or with the same disability. And we all need a foundation of knowledge so that we can serve ourselves mm-hmm. and also so that we can look at this job of caregiving, because it is a job in addition to parenting. Mm-hmm. And we can say the job of caregiving needs to be something that is sustainable over years. And for many of us, myself included, over my lifetime, this will be a full-time forever job. There's no training for this. It's just like, right. here you go. You know, I say the book is the alternative to go home, Google, and cry, which is what most of us are basically told when we get a diagnosis.
Yeah.
And like, what a mess that is. That's what I did.
That's what we all did. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Oh my gosh.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Literally at the beginning of our journey, the first of the many diagnoses that our son got was when he was 2.5 months old. The first specialist he saw was a neuro-ophthalmologist, which I can now spell, which took years. and we found out that Aaron has cortical vision impairment, which means physiologically, his eyes are doing all the things they should, but his brain is not processing the information. And at that time, how that presented with him was total blindness. And his progression with CVI has been, our neuro-ophthalmologist has described as almost unheard of, because Aaron now has a tremendous amount of functional vision. I literally was, the doctor was shining bright lights directly into my baby's eyes. And there was no reaction, no fussing, no blinking, no anything. I was like, you can't see that light, can you? And he's like, nope, sure can. So I literally went home and I Googled blind children Los Angeles. And I was like crying and the dog was like, what's going on? And my kid was probably crying along with me. And my toddler was like, where's my snack? I'm like, I don't know. And I just Googled and I called the first place. And fortunately, it was an organization that was able to start me on a little bit of a path. But we're all reinventing these same wheels and none of us know how to do any of this. And when people say, you should really have a future care plan for your child, like, what? Mm-hmm. You should know about disability rights and advocacy and you need to plan your therapy. No, like nobody knows this. And I wanted a resource so that there could be a foundation, because this go home, Google and cry business, like we got to stop this.
Yeah. 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 Well, and there, I feel like there's also the level too of like, there's the grief portion of it. And, you know, like so many people feel like they can't be in that grief and, you know, they're trying to figure that out while also getting into this complete go mode. I need to do this. You know, these people are saying this and this and this and this, and you're just, you know, so, yeah.
Yes. And then when we're in that mode, we end up feeling like we are managing everyone else's fragile emotions,
mm-hmm.
because all we are hearing, certainly in my case, was, oh my gosh, this is horrible. I'm so sorry. Oh, this is just awful. And all I'm hearing about my baby, and he was literally an infant when we started on this path, all I'm hearing is how tragic this is. And I just wish somebody would have been like, oh my gosh, your baby has awesome hair. You know what? He does. Yeah. Like, he has awesome hair. And everyone's so busy telling you how tragic disability is that you're just like, I'm just going to like dig deeper into this hole and I'm just going to like keep digging down. And nobody's like, hey, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Yes. You got this.
Yeah.
Your baby's awesome. Like,
yes. Yeah, because I mean, disability is still such a dirty word, you know, to so many people when it's like, okay, come on. Like, you know?
Yeah. And as you're saying that, disability is not a scary word to disabled people.
Right.
And so it's like we being those of us who are not disabled, and by the way, might become disabled one day, we are projecting all of this, like, disability is so scary. And then you talk to real life disabled people and they're like, it's actually not scary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just part of their life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the rest of us that need to.
I think it's a really good point what you made. I just want to touch on that again and reemphasize that there's a difference between parenting and caregiving, and they are two different jobs. And since we've talked about that, we've talked to Kelly a couple times since we've started recording, previously. And since you mentioned that and said it in that way, I've been thinking about my life as I've been in my kitchen dealing with whatever's going on with my children. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, am I a parent right now or am I a caregiver right now? And separating those two things in my mind, for whatever reason, it's not like my actions or anything I'm doing is necessarily changing, but my mindset has changed a little bit about, okay, I'm going to switch to parent mode for a moment now. Okay, now we're going to go back to caregiver mode,
mm-hmm.
and making that separation. It's not always super clear, but a lot of the times
messy.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
It is, well, it can be very messy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just helps me maybe process some of my feelings or even like my own actions about what I'm doing right now for this child in this particular way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think
when we think about, most people think about caregivers, you know, they think about somebody who is, let's say they have a grandparent who's getting older and they're wanting to stay in their house. And so they hire caregivers to come in, you know, they're on 12-hour shifts. They do, you know, they care for the person and maybe do some stuff around their house, but then they get a checkout. You know, then they get a checkout and go home. So there's never that, you know, that distinguishment between the two. Like it's always, that's what I'm saying, Brittany, like you said, it's hard to even see where is it stopping, where is it ending. It's just so intermixed. That
it's in your own head, the distinction, I guess.
Yeah.
Not in your workplace or your
when you're
else.
On vacation by yourself is when you're just a parent.
Yeah, I guess.
Even
yeah.
then.
Even
let
then.
Let me know how that goes. I'd love to.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
But no, I so appreciate that you brought that up because I think if we are viewing caregiving as a job in addition to parenting, and being a parent caregiver is different than being a professional caregiver who clocks in, clocks out, than even being a caregiver for perhaps aging parents, mm-hmm. where you are setting something in motion for people who are already adults and oftentimes do have agency in the process. And our kids hopefully do have agency in their process, but also their kids, like they can't drive, like right. there's kid stuff. And just viewing it as a job, I think, is really a helpful distinction because it also can take away some of the guilt, the shame, the emotion. Because, like, my kid is awesome, but the caregiving stuff is so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it is constant. And I need to be able to drop everything in my life at any time because of the caregiving piece. And if we can talk honestly about the job of caregiving and everything that that entails, if we can get trained, if we can educate one another in what all of those pieces are, then I think it also makes disability less scary. It makes parenting a child with a disability less scary because we're able to separate what is hard. Who my child is as a human being is not hard. Like, he's awesome. Like, sometimes drives me crazy because he's a 10-year-old boy and all 10-year-old boys drive their parents crazy at some point. But looking at the pieces of the job does allow you to see it in a more objective way that I think is really helpful and necessary.
I love that. Yes, I love it. Something else that we really want to touch on today, and we've mentioned it, is disability as a word, right? As that taboo word, we've mentioned that. And then the level of, it's not the level of disability, but the way disabilities present themselves, I guess, in the outside world, right? And this is, we mentioned this before, and we really wanted to kind of focus on this in our discussion today. The difference between invisible versus maybe a visual or obvious disability. And in our previous discussions, you mentioned something about the word invisible, Kelly. And I wanted to, I loved how you phrased it. So I want you to, if you remember what you said, if you could kind of tell our audience a little bit about the word invisible as it pertains to disability.
Thank you for asking that. So my language of how I speak about disability is, has been an evolution, and I think it will continue to evolve. And my reference points are disabled people and disabled adults, especially, who I've been very fortunate to have these conversations with for the book and elsewhere. And not only is disability not a bad word, but my son's disability is visible. He walks into a room. You can tell he's got something going on that is very clearly part of his makeup. There are many people for whom their disabilities are not visible. And what I have learned from disabled individuals is it is strongly preferred to say non-visible disability rather than invisible. Because there's a lot of conversation happening very rightly about how people with disabilities in our society are made to feel and treated as though they were invisible. And there's a lot of, we're not going to account for that in our lawmaking, in our plans for this building, in how a movie theater is set up, like whatever it is. We're just going to ignore and we're going to pretend like those people are invisible and they don't exist. And I love the tiny distinction of non-visible versus invisible, because invisible does give that connotation of like, we're just going to pretend you're not there. And nobody wants that.
That's
the opposite of what we're trying to do here. So yeah, non-visible. I love that. And I'm going to try to change that language in my own life too, as far as like a disability goes. So I have the unique distinction of having one child whose disabilities are very, very visible. You can tell when he walks into a room, just like you said, that there's something's there, right? And then my 10-year-old daughter has more of that non-visible autism aspect to her, where it's not immediately obvious. And so they're not only, and this kind of ties back into the whole caregiver parent dynamic as well. Not only do I have that distinction of doing the parent caregiver for my teen son, my older son, with very visible disabilities, but then I have to distinguish and make that separation of parent and caregiver for a non-visible disabled child as well. And so there's just so many moving parts and layers to that. And then I have two, you know, neurotypical children also, and they get to have a parent too, right? So it's, there's just a lot of moving parts, and we don't want to discourage anybody by bringing this up and making them feel overwhelmed just hearing us talk about that. That's not the point. But the point is that these visibilities and non-visibility, not visibilities, these visible and non-visible disabilities are it's important how we engage with these persons, whether they're our own children or others in our lives, even adults, but how others interact with them as well. Right. And we really want to bring that attention to that fact. So I really appreciate that. Tosh and Shannon, do you guys have any like thoughts about that invisible versus that kind of aspect for your own children?
I was just going to say, and this might kind of rabbit hole into something else, but that's kind of, I think even within our own community, that's, or I should say my child's community, that is the hard part too, with a level of not being disabled enough or not looking disabled enough, or so filling this level of not like worthy enough to be. Does that make sense? And so that's hard, you know, because I think a lot of it is my own personal thing that I need to get through, but it can be, you know, we are a comparison world. So that feeling of like, you know, yes, my son is autistic and he has these other diagnoses and we struggle with different things. But, you know, to some people it's like, oh, well, he's, you know, completely speaking and whatever. So that's hard. That's hard to deal with. I mean, Kelly, is that something that like, you know, that you've heard from people?
Not only have I heard it from people, but there's this like, oh my gosh, can we please talk about this? Mm. And so I'm so glad we are talking about this. The who is quote unquote disabled enough, the grace the world may or may not afford us based on how visible a disability is, mm-hmm. like being made to feel invisible within this community, within the world, all of that. So first off, something that I learned and was so appreciative of as I was interviewing for my book, the Americans with Disabilities Act is intentionally very broad in how it describes disability. And that is so empowering and lets the air out of the balloon when it comes to the comparison thing that you're right, we all do, and we shouldn't shame ourselves, but also we got to find a way to not do this. It would be very easy for me to play the my kid's more disabled than your card in a lot of circles, not in all circles. But if we can all just agree, like my hard is my hard, your hard is your hard.
Yes.
And I might, you know, if we were on that terrible show, Mom Swap or whatever, like, no, bad idea, like all bad. But if we were to do that, we might swap, and my kid, who I'm like, oh, he's awesome, we got this, you'd be like, no, this is horrible. Mm-hmm. And I might walk into your house and your kid might be like, wow, you are the worst parent ever. All of our hard is just our hard.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't be comparing. If your kid has quote unquote just dyslexia, then you right. shouldn't be feeling like, oh, but you know what? At least my kid doesn't have a feeding tube. At least my kid doesn't have a vision impairment. Like the at least we need to get rid of. When we look at the legal definitions of disability that were created by disabled individuals with a wide variety of disabilities, it is intentionally broad to include everyone. And It is all in our heads that we are doing this comparison thing, which is really hard to mm-hmm. break ourselves out of. And there is that extra layer. And Brittany, I'd be curious to hear you speak about your experience with this, mm-hmm. of the grace that is afforded to people mm-hmm. who walk into a room and are visibly disabled. My son is very loud and proud, and he squeals and he applauds and he high-fives strangers, and he is, you can't not see us when mm-hmm. we go out in public,
right?
Which we do often, because my kid is loud and different and all of his things that make him his unique self, whereas friends whose kids are also loud and get in people's faces for conversation or whatever the thing is, but they do not quote unquote appear disabled. there's a lot of parent shaming of you need to control your kid.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I'm curious what you guys have experienced. For us, my kid is, he is just so stinking cute and he's still little. And so that gives him a lot of grace. And people are, even if it's pandering and annoying, they're like, oh, he's the cute disabled kid, so I'm not going to be a jerk. Right. And people very rarely are. But I'm curious your experience of when the disability is visible versus when it's not, what that looks like and feels like to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brittany, I really want to hear this too, especially because it's like the dynamic of when you are out, maybe just with Austin by yourself, and then when you're mm-hmm. out with Ruby just by yourself, and even with like in your guys' own your friend circle, you know, they've known you guys, they've known the kids forever, or the people from your church or whatever it might be, how that's even impacted.
Right.
Because
it's so complicated. It's so deliciously complicated, everyone. No,
it's delicious.
It's just a nice way of saying it, I guess.
It's spicy.
It's spicy. Yes. It is interesting because not only do you have the aspect of the non-visible versus the visible, mm-hmm. you have the gender aspect, which is in play, right? You have size, like physical size, mm-hmm. and then the age. All of those things factor in, and it's all baked into our society, and that's just how it is, right? Mm-hmm. So when Austin was young, he's 17 now. When Austin was 10 and younger, like all of your cute kids are right now, it was still very, very visible. He's non-speaking. He's never really spoke to anyone. And he has a lot of stimming and other repetitive behaviors that make it very, very obvious that he is struggling, you know, and different than most. And it was cute, and it was, you know, a lot of indulgent smiles and feeling like they could approach him and talk to me and things. Well, now he's the size of a man. Mm-hmm. And he's big, and he still makes a lot of noise, and he gets mm-hmm. agitated very easily. And sometimes there's a lot of behaviors in public, and not acceptable cute behaviors like flapping your hands in front of your face that, you know, there can be a violent tendency to some of his things, or at least aggressive. Mm-hmm. So, people's reaction vary a lot. There's a lot of staring, and there's a lot of nervousness and anxiousness. And then those who do interact, strangers that do, I feel when he was maybe like around, 10, 11, 12-ish, I would explain. I would say, oh, he has autism, to, you know, and the reaction would vary widely depending on who you mm-hmm. were talking to. But I will never forget, we were at a park, and these particular parts had sand volleyball pits there, and a coach was setting up to do some private sessions with some students, and the students weren't there yet, but he was there. He had all the volleyball set up. He was getting ready, and we were there at the park because we always go early when no one else is around. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he was letting Austin play with the balls and kind of be in the space because he wasn't doing practice yet. And I turned to him at one point. I'm like, oh, sorry, you know, he's messing up your stations. You know, he has autism. And he looked at me, and he was kind of like, I know. Like, he kind of like was condescending to me about it. Like, I can tell. Like, I'm just like, okay, well, I'm just letting, you know, I feel like I'm responsible to advocate and speak for other people. So that was, and he was very, very kind, and it worked out well. And soon after, when all the students started arriving, we headed out. But that's kind of an interesting dynamic now. People give Austin, people who are comfortable with him and have had experiences with him are comfortable coming up to him and approaching him and initiating that contact, because he's not going to do that, right? My daughter, on the other hand, she's still very cute, and she's very bubbly, and she's very sweet, and she's a girl, and she's very girly, and she's into princess and sparkles and all the stuff. So people find that endearing and adorable. Well, that's great, and we're going to ride that train as long as we can. But puberty is coming, folks. And I can already see it, and I can already tell in certain arenas of her life where she is interacting with other girls who age, who are really into Taylor Swift and whatever they're into. They're into boys, and they're talking about this and that and everything and makeup and all this stuff. And she's still over here with her princess and her sparkles. And they don't know her peers are struggling connecting with her. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing the awkward pauses and them looking at each other and not looking at my daughter, trying to figure out what they should say or shouldn't say. Mm-hmm. And they're all very sweet girls. No one is trying to be malicious or mean, but they don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding that also with adults a little bit when she doesn't maybe answer or talk to them the same way as the other girls in the group, right? So it's a moving target, and it's interesting to see how it is evolving as they get older. Mm-hmm. That is a really, really long explanation that's kind of all over the place. But that's kind of my experience. I'm like navigating all this as the parent and watching, but yet I want them to have autonomy and like speak for themselves and not have mom interjecting all the time. But yet I see where there might be snags. So it's that parent caregiver aspect again, like which one am I going to be in this moment, and how am I going to maybe help this child or let them maybe figure it out a little bit on their own? You know, it's, mm-hmm. It's deliciously complicated.
Deliciously spicy.
So spicy and complicated and all the things. And thank you so much for sharing all of that. I love that you brought up that the other children in the interaction are struggling to connect.
Yeah.
And the way that you said that was so objective and neutral and not placing any judgment on anyone. Mm-hmm. Because as you were saying that and telling your story, I was given the impression that they genuinely want to connect. And I wish there was an answer to, do we helicopter and facilitate that interaction or no, because they're preteen girls and they don't want adults coming in and facilitating their interactions.
Right.
Yeah. It's really hard to figure out when we do all the things and when we don't, and mm-hmm. kids have different levels of communication and understanding, and there may or may not be intellectual disability at play. Certainly many autistic and neurodivergent individuals, there is not intellectual disability at play, but it is presumed by others that there is, which is a whole other layer of mess.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to acknowledge. I mean, like you said, there's not a whole lot we can do about any of those things. I can't wave a magic wand and fix these problems. I don't have the answers. But it is important to acknowledge that you as the caregiver slash parent are thinking about all of these things as everyone else is having a delightful social interaction or party or, you know, a child's birthday party, for instance, where there's multiple children around. You're having this, it's supposed to be fun and engaging and just a good time.
Yeah.
I'm turned on and I am watching everything. I am trying to decide whether I intervene or not and how much, all those things that I talked about before. Mm-hmm. And it's very mentally taxing. It can be, right? And depending on your level of comfort with the people around you and the situation, the environment, all those things, it really fluctuates on how much you can enjoy the party or participate as your own autonomous individual on top of being this caregiver. So I just want everyone to know we see that and we feel that. I think all four of us do. Mm-hmm. And just know that that's the job. And that's the part we're all trying to figure out, right? And that's what this book is about. And that's what our lives are about, is just trying mm-hmm. to like understand how to interact for ourselves, for our children, and then when to not. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Everything you said as you were saying that, we're literally all nodding and like we're all gonna be seasick from all the nodding we were just doing, right? Oh my gosh, seasickness, pirates, back to that again. Anyway, we talk about pirates a lot offline. But the when I learned the phrase cognitive labor, it was like that cartoon light bulb went on above my head. And I'm that's why I'm tired all the time.
Yeah.
It's not because I'm not sleeping.
Right.
It's because my brain is always on, going to the grocery store, the birthday party, school drop off, the park. Like at all times, my brain is always on. I am anticipating, I am watching for safety, others' reactions, how my kid is reacting, his, he has a lot of sensory processing stuff, sensory, how he's doing, what I can do to support him, to enable him, to pull him back when he is unsafe or uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. My brain never stops. When he's at school, I have my phone on in case I get a call because he has epilepsy and the feeding tube and the like, all of the different parts. My brain never stops. And it is exhausting, even on the best days. And we have so many great days. Going to a, you know, friend's barbecue is not relaxing.
Right. No.
I'm very fortunate to have a husband who is a partner in all things and participates. Mm-hmm. And it is a relay race of handing off.
Yeah.
On the job of caregiver.
Yeah.
While all of the other families, many of whom in our friend group, like have kids even younger than Aaron, and the kids are all running around and playing tag and doing the things. And they don't need an adult right there at all times, mm-hmm. oftentimes singing head, shoulders, knees, and toes, playing the DuckTales theme over and over and over. there's a lot of DuckTales in our house.
I am all about it. I fully support this.
Love it. DuckTales is still a thing.
Woo. It's been rebooted. Yeah.
Oh, because that's when we were children.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the reboot is very good. And we listened to the first like 20 seconds of the DuckTales theme song, not to brag, but about 200 times a day because awesome. And our son just pushes that button and we're like, cool, let's sing that again.
The 15 second rewind, let me tell you.
Okay, that makes me feel so much better that it's not just me.
I just wanted a little side note to that, Kelly, is that, you know, it's like that cognitive part while you're in your day-to-day things, but then it's also that future stuff that's constantly running through your head, you know, from like a week from now, a month from now, 10 years from now, you know, it's just this constant, you know, mm-hmm. bearing on you.
Yes. Yeah. And while our friends are talking about they just had their 15-year wedding anniversary and they went on this trip and their kids stayed with the grandparents and here's our pictures and wasn't it great? I want to hear about that because they're my good friends. Also, at the same time, I totally don't want to hear about that because we can't do that, my husband and I together, maybe ever. Hopefully that will change. But there is a lot that we have to shift and make peace with that I'm still making peace with because my kids are amazing and not but this is not the life I envisioned. I didn't envision going out on a date night to entail so much mental, cognitive, emotional labor for me.
Yeah.
To prepare all of the things and the meds and the feeding tube and the just in case. And it can't just be a babysitter. It can't just be like, it has to be, it's like a thing.
Well, and then it puts so much pressure on you because you've done all of this, like, you know, preparation to go out even just for a couple of hours or whatever it is, you know, an overnight stay, whatever you're doing. And then I feel this pressure of like, okay, well, I put in all this effort and time and money and
now it's caregiving. Gotta be.
And now I have to, it better be perfect.
I better perform, be you know, like yeah, it has to be the best.
Because who knows when this time's going to come, when I'm going to get this chance again. And it just puts so much pressure on yourself.
Yes.
And once you like, I don't know, the best thing you could do for yourself is try to let that go. I know it's hard and it takes some practice. And the more times you do it, it gets a little easier. But that's a big piece for me. I'm still working on it. But But when I started realizing that and letting that go, I enjoyed myself a lot more, and just don't put that pressure on yourself to make this magical, you know, evening or weekend or yes. whatever. I wanted to give Shannon a couple of seconds here.
Yeah, she's having
a little bit of microphone issue, so she doesn't want to interrupt us. So I'm going to give her a little space to chat so she won't like, but Shannon, speak on that aspect of it for you and Jay, and then even just like that whole cognitive labor piece for you with Gracie. I'd be curious mm-hmm, to hear mm-hmm. your thoughts.
Sure. I was trying to be quiet so our podcast editor, Natasha Doman, doesn't kill me later because I'm having mic stuff. It's everything that you guys are saying. I'm just over here like, yes, yes, my brain. You know, you even just mentioned, Kelly, like a friend's barbecue. And immediately in my head, I was like, nope, like there are
my stress levels went up. Yeah.
Yeah. Immediately. There are so many things that we don't even attempt because of the location where it might be. Right. Mm-hmm. When Gracie was smaller, we were a little bit more open. We would go to places. And there were just so many times where, you know, we went to a good friend's house and they were wonderful. But they had one teenage child in glass fixtures throughout their whole house. And I spent the entire time we were there chasing Gracie, you know, or we always have to make sure we have two cars if we're going to do something. Because mm-hmm. at some point, you know, like Gracie's going to be done. And that's one of her things is when she's done, she's done.
She's done.
Like mm-hmm. there's no working around it. There's one of us is leaving at that point. And I think that I have a lot of guilt because I worry that we are not putting her in the position to learn new things because of the amount of stress and mental load it causes on us. But I think part of that is because, like you were saying, it's never ending. There's no clock out for us. We're mm-hmm. constantly always on. So then when you do talk about those additional things, it's like, I'm trying to survive my day-to-day life. And then you're wanting me to do this extra stuff on top of it, which is so difficult. And that's just, you know, all of the cognitive labor side of things. But then, you know, Gracie, when Gracie walks into a room, you don't immediately know that she has a disability. I'd say within 3 minutes, you're going to know that there's something going on. Because she's just very, you know, bouncy and has tons of energy. And we have a lot of our repetitive thing at our house is Mickey Mouse. It's always been Mickey Mouse. There is a lot of saying, oh, Toodles, over and over and over and over again. We have a dog named Toodles. So, you know, it becomes obvious, you know. Sorry, I'm getting over a sore throat. You know, rather quickly once we mm-hmm. enter a space. But because she doesn't look disabled, there are times where we are out and she is having a moment, whether it be sensory related or not, where we do get looks. And I am, you know, I mean, Tosh knows, like my thing is kick rocks. Like if you don't like it, kick rocks. Like I have a very low tolerance for people that are judging in any way, shape, or form. And I have no problem letting them know that because they're just ignorant. And I say that from a place of I used to be that ignorant human in Target mm-hmm. who would give mm-hmm. dirty looks to those parents.
Yes.
And I think I had a neighbor reach out to me the other day. I've done a lot of work in this neighborhood getting to know people. Mostly for Gracie, because I need to ensure her safety because she is non-speaking. And if she does get out of the house, I need people to understand why, you know, they need to contact us. And I've just been getting to know a lot of people. And one of my neighbors is very young and she's going to school. And she actually told me on the phone she's considering becoming a BCBA. And she had asked if she could call me and ask a few questions about, you know, what it's like and all of that. And, she had asked about family services and I just laughed and she is very sweet and she's coming from an amazing place. And she kind of asked me about it. And I said, that's a joke. You know, I was like, we've had quote family services since Gracie turned 3 years old. I've been qualified for 600 hours of respite since Gracie was three. Ask me how many hours I've used since she turned three. It's impossible. It's impossible, one, to find somebody who you trust to even want to attempt to get a break. When you do find somebody you like, they don't get paid well enough, so they're gone the next time you want to use them. And so you're starting over and over and over again. And we were just talking about services, and I told her, you know, you mentioned you wanted to be a BCBA. And I said, there are no services after diagnosis for family. And it was 2.5 years into Gracie's diagnosis before a BCBA sat down in my home and said, before we get started, can I ask how you are?
Wow.
And it blew my mind. 2.5 years in. And I said, but if you ask any family, they're going to tell you that they would still much rather their child get services than ever be asked how they're doing or if they need anything. You know, so it is, it's just...
Or how the siblings are doing, or how, you know, everybody in the house. Mm-hmm. Oh, she muted. Gracie's back in the room. That's something.
There's Gracie.
So Gracie is here today.
That's something.
It's okay.
That's something too, though. You know, Kelly, that like with that whole conversation is that, you know, it's not just. Yes, we are the main caregiver, the main provider. You know, if there's two people in the household, parents, sometimes it's split, but a lot of times it's one or the other that's more. But just even how are the other family members are doing? You know, how your son, your older son, is doing? How does this affect him? How does and being able to find those professionals that. Mm-hmm. To a level can understand that and can help, you know, with therapy, can help with, I don't know. It's so, as far as we are medically, it's so mind blowing that we still are so in the dark.
We are so in the dark, and we are, and it's such a mess. And depending on which state you are right. in, yeah. what is even available to be covered by your insurance company, and most certainly by state services, even under the same federal guidelines, it varies wildly. And as women, not just as parents, and not just as parents of kids with disabilities, we are trained to say, when people ask how we're doing, I'm fine. It's fine. Mm-hmm. How are you? Mm-hmm. I'm fine. No.
Yes.
Like, I'm rarely just fine. I might be great. I might be just like in the gutter, like scraping myself off, like of the driveway of like what is just happening. But I am very rarely just fine.
Yeah.
And
I feel this in my core, Kelly.
Oh my gosh.
If I'm the person that I'm like, there's moments and I'm like, I am great. People know whatever. And then there's most other moments where it's like, yep, I'm on that struggle bus. You know, how much do you want to know? You want to know, like, you want me to get deep with you or?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, do you, you want really want,
you want something really surface
for that?
Yeah. Yes. The answer is usually no, they don't want you to.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why it's so important. And I know you guys have said this in other podcasts, and I think we touched on this in the beginning, of finding connection, not isolating. Like, all of that is really hard. And that's why a podcast like this is probably the lifeline for a lot of people and their mental health. Mm-hmm. And moms who are all caregiver all the time,
yeah,
who don't have anyone in person, who don't have anyone locally, who are like, I don't even have anybody I can call. Mm-hmm. But when I am on a walk with my kid around the block for the 100th time today, maybe I can listen to this podcast in one ear and feel like I have this community.
Yeah.
Because you're right. And Shannon, your point of, given the choice between doing the things for our mental health and getting our kid the services to support them, like, we'll choose the services. And also, that's not the wrong choice. And when people are like, oh, prioritize self-care, like, no, that's actually, I'm not going to go to the spa today because my kid has a GI doctor appointment and then an OT appointment and then a speech therapy appointment. And like, I'm not going to the spa.
Yeah. Spa, what are you talking about? I will be happy to go to the grocery store by myself.
Oh my gosh.
And I will walk around the entire grocery store.
Yes.
And that's not fun. It's just being by myself.
Yes. And creating that space, and what Brittany was saying earlier about, you know, just to go on date night, you end up so like,
that's
when you're out of the house, is it even worth it? And so that like walk around the grocery store or Target or wherever, if that is what you have the capacity for, and even if it is 5 minutes or an hour of just like walk around the store and the employees are like, what's up with her?
What's she doing? She's stealing.
Yep. Yes. Oh my gosh. They know you're dealing, and that's okay. Of like, you know what? That counts as self-care.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I know I talk about this in the book of like, we need to reframe like what the self-care is, because we need to.
Girl, come on.
Not just say like, oh, I'm worried about you. You should take a yoga class. You should get a massage. No.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is not where my brain is. And I would just cry through those things. What I need, like, I need a system in place so that when everything hits the fan, because it will hit the fan, I need a system in place so that I know how to deal with this.
Yeah.
I need to know how to call my insurance company so that I can do the thing. So it's not going to take 8 hours. So it's going to take 20 minutes. Like, I need systems, and I need it to all be manageable and sustainable over a long period of time.
Yeah.
So that I can't, you know what? I would love a spa day. That sounds great. But there's so much that I need to put in place before I can enjoy that. And so all of this boring but necessary stuff, you know, pack a bag for the emergency room. Be sure there are really warm socks, because emergency rooms are always freezing.
Freezing, yeah.
Right? It's horrible.
Yeah.
Like, those things get discounted in like, oh, you should take care of yourself first. But the reality is, putting these systems in place is the taking care of yourself first so that you can enjoy the other things. If I was like, I'm going to take the afternoon off and go to a movie, I would not enjoy that movie, because I need to do the appointments, make the list, prepare for the IEP, get the social services email returned. Right. Like, there's so much that I need to do. And we end up feeling like, oh, we shouldn't do that. We should go get our nails done. Like,
yeah this isn't the airplane, you know, where the bags, airbags drop down, and take care of yourself first before you take care of your child. It's like, no.
Oh, that metaphor makes me want to scream. Yeah. And I think the metaphor is well-intentioned and like, take care of yourself, moms, because especially moms need to do this. Like, that's not the metaphor. Maybe with my non-disabled child, that's the metaphor. But when it comes to the caregiving role and job, the metaphor isn't hang out in the airplane, put on your oxygen mask, and then there's, and then the pilot's going to land the plane and you're fine. The metaphor is learn to fly a plane, because at some point your plane will go down. And while you are reading up on how to fly a plane, you also need to practice holding your breath for long periods of time, because your child can't wait for the oxygen mask. You literally have to put on their oxygen mask. So if you have not practiced holding your breath, if you're not ready to put on their mask while you're holding your breath, go run up, fly the plane, and probably pass out bags of peanuts to everybody to let them know you're okay.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Like, that's our metaphor, is like, we have to learn to fly the plane because it will go down.
That's so so good. I'm dying right now.
Dosh is crying. Like, cry laughing.
By the way, if you were actually dying, we all know how to stop that. Like, we are all medically trained over Zoom. We can do that.
I'm comfortable in this group. I don't know if I was with other people. I know what you girls would know what to do. But yes.
Well, Kelly, this has been amazing.
Oh, and my gosh.
I love that metaphor. And I hope if you take nothing away from this conversation, please, please take that little nugget with you as we leave. Yes. Your book is the perfect way to start that process of learning how to fly your plane. And yeah, I really hope
it's
everyone
your user guide.
can buy it. We'll make sure, once again, the links will be in the show notes for that. Is there anything, as we've had this conversation, this is kind of closing thoughts, Kelly, that you really want to say to other parents out there in this world that we all live in? Is there some message that you have for them that you'd like to share?
Thank you for asking that. Of the very many things, if you are a parent and you feel like you are overwhelmed and you are struggling with all this and you're like, this is way too much, congratulations. We are here to validate that. You are right and you are on track.
Stamp of approval. Yeah.
Any of us who even appear to be organized, we feel that too.
Mm-hmm.
So start from there. Validate your own overwhelmed feelings, like whatever it is. Find something that you can have control over. There are many things that you cannot control. Own up to those, own those, and say, I can't control all of these things, but find the places where you can have a victory, whether that is following up and making sure your child's services are being delivered during the school day, whether that is looking at your financial plan and say, we need to figure this out, like a tiny thing, a big thing, whatever it is, find something you can control. Mm-hmm. That will give you a sense of victory. So much of this starts from a place of us feeling out of control and we are being reactive to everything. If you can find even a tiny little place where you can be proactive,
yes,
it starts to chip away at that overwhelm and that feeling of inadequacy that I certainly have and that so many of us have. You can do this. You might not have a choice, but there are systems you can put in place and there are people to connect with that can and will help.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that
so much. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kelly, where can people find you? So they've heard this wonderful conversation. They're like, okay, I'm going to get the book, click. I need more Kelly in my life. Where do they go?
Anyone can find me at my website, kellycoleman.com, and that's K-E-L-L-E-Y, coleman.com. And that has info to social media and links and book and all of that. And would really love to connect with folks because, as you guys know, like we are all in this together.
Yeah. 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 Yes. And people need a face with this little spicy personality.
And it's
so not delicious. I'm not delicious.
You are deliciously spicy and sweet and maybe even a little sour. Yes, you are all the things.
Thank you. So ditto to all of you guys. I love all that you are putting out into the world.
Thank you for being here with us today, everybody. We have really loved learning more about Kelly, our conversations with her on and off the mic. We hope to continue to stay in contact with you. And read this book. And if you have questions, as people get to read it, it's just coming out in March, on March 12th.
Mm-hmm.
March 12th is the official day. If you pre-order it, I imagine it'll be mailed or delivered on that day or soon after. So as soon as everyone can get their little hot little hands on this book, then they can start reading it, like as we've had the privilege to do. And then maybe we can have some further conversations about it. But I just really encourage everyone to focus on the things that we talked about today, read the book and learn how to navigate this plane on your own. And we'll be flying next to you in our own plane, but maybe we can like calm a little bit and like chat and we'll figure it out together. So
right. We'll toss you a bag of peanuts
and throw peanuts for sure. for sure.
Unless you're allergic to peanuts.
I was just going to say, wait a second, maybe peanuts aren't the best option.
Then pretzels, but wait, you're gluten-free. Oh, man. Oh, geez.
We'll find something to throw at you. Water, I don't know.
A vodka.
In a kind of loving way. There you go.
Well, everyone, have a great day. Thank you for being here. If you want to connect with us, just search Moms Talk Autism, Instagram, you know, .com, all of the places. That's where we're at. You know where to find us. Hello at Moms Talk Autism. If you have questions, you want to email us. And we will see you again next week.
All goodbye, right, y'all.
Bye.